100 to 102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
I'm Sam Smith and this is the Sunday Supplement. On today's programme, I'm joined in the studio by the Fianna Fáil TD for Carlo Kilkenny, that's John McGuinness, Labour Party Senator Alex White, and the Fine Gael spokesman on Enterprise, Trade and Employment, that's Leo Varadkar. We're going to be talking to our US correspondent, Ed Hayes, live from New York later, and of course you can always text us 083-4100-102, that's thanks to 3 Mobile. Or you can listen to us on todayfm.com. And if you miss any part of our show today, you can download our podcast every week through iTunes or just go straight through to todayfm.com. Anyway, it's a week of swine flu scares and apocalyptic government cutbacks. According to the Tribune, colleges are poised to deal with mass swine flu deaths of young people. Jack O'Connor was predicting a winter of strikes and medieval misery. But Ronaldo's in Tallow tomorrow night. Leonard Cohen's in the U2 on Wednesday night. And U2 are in Croke Park on Friday night. There we go, that's Leonard Cohen. He's in town this week. We will be talking about it later probably, but astonishingly, some people are going to pick up his concerts. So that's the sort of time it is. But I suppose all last week, John McGuinness, Board Snip, was the only show in town for most politicians. It's obviously going to cause ructions right through the political and civil administration, I expect. Tell me, you have had your differences with the leadership of Fianna Fáil. Have you got confidence in Brian Cowan to take the government through this?
I think that he's going to have to square up to the whole report. I think that there's an issue there in relation to all of the content of that report and how the political system deals with it. Indeed, how the administration deals with it. And there is now emerging differences on all sides in terms of the political side, the administration, how the public sector look at it and so on. And it's a huge challenge for the opposition and for the trade union movement. And right through it, there is going to be a question
right through,
about
but
leadership.
He is the Taoiseach of the land. There appears to be a division between the Department of Finance and the Department of the Taoiseach. What it seems to boil down to is the national partnership. You know, the Taoiseach and his department seem to think they're going to do what they can to keep it alive. The Department of Finance seem to think we can't do this without getting rid of partnership.
Yeah, and I think when you examine that, you know, the social partnership model is dated, completely out of date, and it's down to government making the decision. And that's where the tension comes between finance and indeed the Taoiseach's department. My view on it is that yes, you consult and you ask, but you don't deliberate forever. You make the decision. I think the government will be judged on the decisions that they make. I think that Brian Cowan and Brian Lennon will be judged on the speed of the decision that they make in relation to the doable parts of this report in the course of the summer. And then every single minister will be judged on the political response that they have to the cutbacks that have been set out in McCarthy for each and every single different department. And that's going to affect all of the government parties, and it certainly is going to mean that Labour and Fine Gael are going to have real policies.
And they will have to come back to that. How much support do you think the Taoiseach has in your parliamentary party at the moment?
Well, he has the support of the parliamentary party. Obviously, there's concern about where we're going and how we're getting there. And there is an issue now in relation to this. So it's going to bring forward political tensions. And it certainly will bring forward tensions between departments and between the cabinet and the backbenches, and indeed the general public. And it's a huge political question for the Taoiseach to answer as to how that leadership can be spread across the country to bring people with him and to bring the backbenches with him.
So where will that line fall, do you think, that Brian Cowan has to do this, or he can't expect the support of the party, or if he does this, he will get the support? Is there any one line that
Brian,
you can see?
I think that the cabinet, with Brian Cowan, and you're emphasising the Taoiseach, they have to do this. This is not about whether it's good for Fianna Fáil or good for the political system. This is about whether it's good for the country. Fact of the matter is, we have to bring forward a tough budget which has to be supported not only by the two parties in government, but indeed in a broad way by the people. That's where leadership comes in. That's where the question of the ability to pull that budget through.
Well, you can't tax anymore. That seems to be the message coming through now. There is that when you did increase the taxes, you actually got a fall in the yield off the taxes. So that doesn't seem to work. So therefore, cuts in expenditure seem to be the only remedy left.
Sam, over the last 12 years, we have become very fat and bloated in terms of our public sector and how we do business. We now need to downsize government. And we should not touch the tax base again. There's not much room in there to touch it. Charlie McCreevy's on the papers this morning saying that that should not happen. So we're getting warnings from outside the country as well. We have the IMF knocking on the door. And the political response has to be that we will do our own business. In doing our own business, we're going to have to introduce new measures, new cuts in every single department and in the structure and operation of the public sector. And we have to try to do that with the support of the unions, who will have to give leadership on this as well. But failing that, we will have to take political decisions, political in every single department, and to stand over them. And
so then do you think partnership will survive this?
I think partnership will be under a lot of stress and pressure to survive this. If they don't respond in the dynamic way that is now needed to represent a modern country in difficulty but anxious to get out of it and wanting to take the decisions that are necessary, that requires real leadership.
Well, that's the point, Alex White, I suppose, will come to you now, or not to you so much as the leader of the Labour Party, have to look at this. Now, the trade unions, what is it? You've got, hundreds of thousands of pounds from the trade unions over recent years, in payments, so you're bedfar from that way. Do you think, support a new benchmarking whereby, public service levels of pay in this country will be measured against, public service pay in other countries?
I don't have a problem. I mean, Eamon Gilmore said that there is a case for a new benchmarking to be engaged in. But, I've always felt a little bit, I always felt that the benchmarking process was problematic because, you look to see to what you're going to compare salaries to. Do you compare them to the private sector? Do you compare them to salaries in other public sector salaries in other countries? What's your comparator? And, sometimes that's, it's depending on what point of view you take, that's, what's your starting point? To whom you're comparing it?
Well, the ending point was, Alex, that we ended up with the highest paid politicians and public servants in the world.
Yeah, we certainly have a problem. Definitely at the higher levels of the public service, we have a problem with salaries, and they're too high, and they should be brought down, in my opinion. And they should never have been put up as high as they were put. Mm-hmm. Now, the question of benchmarking, people say reverse benchmarking. I think that there is going to be an issue for the trade unions. There is going to be an issue for people involved in social partnership. But I actually agree with John on that, on this particular question about social partnership. The question here is not will social partnership survive. The question is, will we make the right decisions for the country? Will politicians, government in particular, actually carry the can because they're in government, make the right decisions? The opposition has a job to do as well. The political system needs to perform as a political system, government and opposition. And I must say that whereas I know social, I always thought social partnership, not against social partnership, but I think it's a process, it's a mechanism to try to seek agreement on issues. But it's certainly not an end in itself. And frankly, I don't think that this debate should be defined as whether social partnership survives. What was his purpose?
It's been there for a generation now, practically.
Well, yeah, it was essentially brought in the 1980s. In similar sorts of circumstances, 87, yeah. Sorry, in similar sorts of circumstances that we're facing now, don't forget. It was Mr. Haughey and Mr. McSherry and so on who who were in government at the time, and the unions were brought in, the employers and so on.
And Alan Shatter did his bit with Fine Gael.
It became a big, it became something, maybe something bigger than it was originally intended. But can I just move back? John, can I just make this point about government? I mean, I think there are differences, there are going to be political differences on what's going to follow. John says we need to downsize government. We need to downsize the state. I mean, that, in my view, it's a very political statement. In fact, it's a very ideological statement. I mean, it's one that's defined politics and defined differences all across the world, not in this country.
Well, do you think you need 166 TDs, for instance?
No, personally, no, I don't actually think you need 166 TDs. But I think John was talking about something bigger than the number of TDs. I think he was talking about the size of the state and the size of government. And to me, it's a question of the quality of public services. I mean, I think there is definitely an argument in areas for major change to occur. Duplication of services, duplication of agencies.
Well, have you ever heard anybody say, all of these things, there should be a worse public service?
But the quality, but the question is, well, actually, maybe people don't say that. But when they think about downsizing, very often they don't realise that what they actually mean very often would be a worse public service in certain areas. If you have fewer doctors, it's very easy to sit back and say, we'll downsize, reduce the number of doctors. That means people who are ill not getting the same attention. So therefore, it is a worse health
service. Or if it was better managed, perhaps it might get better.
Well, exactly. Eamon Gilmore's made that point, you know, in terms of management of services, duplication of services. I mean, it's rife. Reading the report, I mean, one good thing about the report is that, I mean, it does, I don't agree with people who are essentially anti-public service setting the agenda all the time. But having said that, there is a menu. It makes very interesting reading in relation to some of the things that happen in this country.
I mean, it is the problem at the minute, I would suggest. Alex, for instance,
it is a problem.
Okay, my favourite cut. Everybody should think up, by the way, at some stage, we're going to ask you for your favourite cut.
You're impoverishing the debate if you reduce it to that.
Well, no, I'll tell you one now that I think the Minister for Finance pointed out to some of his colleagues was that there's an allowance for guards, right? Guards get an allowance if they're not entitled to any other allowance. Would you believe that now? That's actually there. Leo Varadkar, you're there at the minute. Now, Fine Gael, I don't think he's going to fight with cuts. Perhaps somebody more beefy like yourself might say, not enough of them, we should have more of them and they should be faster, whatever. But at the end of the day, we're in here to a fight, basically, I suggest, for the survival of the nation this winter, don't you think?
I think that is the case, that the country is in peril. And the situation is much worse than it was in the early 80s. Not only do we have a massive budget deficit, we also have huge private sector indebtedness, which is a problem that we didn't have. Personal debt is just ginormous. We have a deficit of about 20 billion at the moment. Most people say 5 billion of that is down to the recession, 15 billion is structural, it's down to the mismanagement of the economy over the past 10 years. On board SNP identifies 5 billion in savings, so that still leaves another 10 billion to be found between tax increases, which are inevitable, and also further
spending
reductions.
Can we take more tax increases? Like, the advice we're getting at the minute is that the ones that were introduced since last September have had, you know, the law of diminishing returns.
Yeah, that's correct. The government increased excise, VAT, income taxes, and revenues fell. And revenues fell faster than the economy shrinking, which shows real evidence that people are actually hoarding money, increasing savings, and not spending. And the more you increase taxes, the more they're going to, ironically, the more they're going to save and the less they're going to spend. Yeah. So I hear some people talking about this problem of people increasing savings, and yet at the same time they talk about higher taxes, which is actually one way to ensure that people don't spend money. But there are areas in the tax system that are unfair. There are certainly cases of, in fact, it's the norm for people who are in very high incomes not to pay very much tax at all. That needs to be addressed. And there's also the issue as well of how we tax. And we tax in Ireland work very heavily. The one thing you don't want to do in Ireland is make your money by working, particularly if you're middle class, where you lose so much of your income now, up to 53% in some cases, 63% if you're a public servant, to tax. Yet you can acquire capital wealth and you can have phenomenal wealth and assets and pay virtually no tax at all. But that's going to be a matter, I think, for a different report. But as regards the board SNP report, I think it's very welcome. I don't agree with everything in it, but I do agree with a lot that's in it. And a lot of it is the kind of things that Fine Gael has been saying for a very long time, that the public service has become too bloated, an extra 45,000 people hired on.
So anybody who hasn't been saying that?
But yeah, I do actually. And well, we haven't really heard from Fianna Fáil and Labour or the unions or a lot of the commentary until recent years. These are the kind of things that Fine Gael has been saying since 2003, that the government was creating a quango, an agency for every problem.
Richard Bruton was good on benchmarking.
Benchmarking, again, going back to 2003. Brian Hayes talking consistently about about government budgets increasing too fast, including social welfare. The kind of things that I've been saying about quangos, and the report that I did over 2 years ago now on the rationalisation of quangos and state agencies. So a lot of this is the kind of thing that Fine Gael didn't need a report to know about. You know, a lot of this stuff was here already for people who cared.
Other reports there from the OECD from others that we never acted on.
Exactly.
And essentially, when you look at the report,
a lot of this isn't new, you know.
And the other reports is actually about good governance.
So I think in the studio this morning, John, we could have the basis for a government of national unity.
Steady on.
I mean, everybody's first thoughts. Everybody's.
Well, but there's a very important reason why we can't. I think one thing that's very encouraging for me, though, is that. Is to hear Eamon Gilmore talk about saying on the radio in Morning Ireland that 15,000 or 17,000 reductions the number in public servants is possible, and to hear him talking about a third benchmarking, and to me that really says to me that you know the Labour Fine Gael coalition is looking a lot stronger than it was.
Did you
before.
Have a favourite? Cut
a favourite
that
cut.
You saw.
The quangos, of course. It's my the bane of my life, and I'm determined to get rid of them.
No individual cut that you thought and said, "Jesus, did they ever do that?" You know, there were some astonishing ones there. And listen, we'll think about that. Text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
With VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only. Your health. The Sunday Supplement. 100-102 Today FM.
Welcome back. Text us 083-4100-102. Thanks to 3 Mobile. If you have any comments, we've got a lot of comments so far. We've got one which says, how much did the report cost? Well, correct me if I'm wrong, panel, but I think Colm McCarthy got 37,000, was it, or 35,000?
I think the entire report cost.
I think the entire report cost 37,000.
Oh, yeah, it did, because it was 2,300, I think, for tea and sandwiches. Good value for money.
Given the quality of work,
it means, I don't presume that the state gets Colm McCarthy for 70 grand a year, but it'd be a good beginning.
If you just save 3 billion for 38,000, you'd be doing very well.
Another is saying here, if the politicians want us to take them seriously, they should set an example and take a 10% cut in take home pay and no pension until retirement at 65.
Gosh, we've done all that. We've done that. My pay cut's 15% at this stage, and.
Insist on, quote, giving the money to charity. What's all that about?
Well, I think some of them are... I can understand why they did it, and it's something that I considered doing as well, you know, because we've all been hit by the 10% pension levy, and some of us have taken pay cuts on top of that. And I know some of the people who took the voluntary pay cut decided that they'd rather give the money to charity than to Brian Lenehan. And given the way the government wastes their money, and this report shows it, I can understand why they did it. Now, in my case...
Why they did it? Well, I think that the one thing is, should charity not be something you do quietly? A gentleman does not, you know, boast about how much money he gives to charity, for a start. And I would have thought it would be to help the exchequer, not their conscience or their standing in their community if they're given to local causes.
Look, people make decisions for their own reasons. I agree with what it says in the Bible, which is that when you give charity, you give it one hand and without letting the other hand know what you're doing. And I think most politicians give a lot of money to charity and they don't make a big deal of it, but each to their own in that regard.
It will, may I say, Leo, that quoting from the Bible, having lived in Northern Ireland, it's a slippery slope. We can get a verse in there to suit everything we want to do. Other callers, let's see. When will we start getting some info from above on how things will work when the IMF comes in? That's from Paul. I think there'll just be an alarm bell. There'll be a curfew from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. or something
That does mean that we have to communicate the message of where we are and so on, how we're going to get there. People are asking that question and they're quite fearful of where we are right now and not knowing how it's going to affect them in their lives. And as politicians, while giving leadership, we also have to deliver a message which will inform them, because they're making decisions based on the money that they have now. If they're not going to have that, well, then they need to know where they're going. Reps 4 is a typical example, and you had the farmers take to the street in their thousands. So we do need to be conscious of the fact that every decision that we will take in the long or short term will affect the lives of people.
Leo, presumably you must be thinking now that it's getting more and more unlikely that the current configuration in government, the configuration of parties, will be re-elected. You do seem encouraged by Eamon Gilmore's statement last week saying that he thought he could lose 17,000 people from the public service. Do you think it's getting easier now for yourselves and Labour to form a policy, a common policy for government?
I think it's getting easier for us to form a government, and actually 17,000 is further than we went. We suggested more close to 15 because we wouldn't agree with the cuts in education that are proposed in on board SNP. But I don't think either party is going to have an alliance before the election. But of course, you know, that's a matter for later on. I don't think it's in the interest of either party to do that.
Well, you couldn't be in government without them, could you?
It would be very unlikely.
Except you go in with Fianna Fáil.
Well, no, that's not going to happen. And I think that's something that's very important about this report, is that this is on board SNP NUA. This is the second on board SNP report. Mm. And essentially, if you want to reduce the ridiculous, twice in 30 years, twice in my lifetime, Fianna Fáil has brought us to the bankrupt.
Were they in government until 97 or 87? You're saying they were in from 83 to 87?
No, the country was already in bankruptcy at that stage. They were in government from
77.
The original Boris report was the early 80s, after the Haughey Martin O'Donoghue.
And then you were in from 83 to 87. Yeah. And tell me, the national debt doubled during that time, didn't it?
The national debt doubled during that time. National debt has actually doubled last year. So, you know, it took Gareth Fitzgerald 5 years to do, Brian Lenihan did in 1 year. But that government in the early 80s was essentially picking up the mess that was left before by the last period of Fianna Fáil profligate.
So the 4 years when Labour and Fine Gael were in from 83 to 87 didn't count, is that what you're saying?
What happened in the period of the Fitzgerald Spring government of 83 to 87 was they were left with an unbelievable mess, which they were unable to fix, but they certainly did not create it. What we've had on two occasions now in 30 years is Fianna Fáil, through its irresponsibility and profligacy, bringing the country to the brink of bankruptcy. And that's why it's so important that not only do they lose the next election, that they're actually cleansed.
Yeah, but then, if I can remember, Alan Jukes, as leader of the party in 87, did the patriotic thing, help the country, and just get rid of him in no time at all.
And the patriotic thing to do now is, you know, when Saddam Hussein was brought down in Iraq, you had de-Ba'athification. When the Nazis were brought down, I'm not comparing Fianna Fáil to Nazis, just in case anyone starts going crazy now. When that regime was brought down in 1945, you had denazification in Germany. What we need in Ireland after the next election is de-Fianna Fáilification.
But must you know a good way of getting that, by the way.
Anyone associated with them must be removed from board or state agencies, or you name it. We need absolute cleansing and removal of them from office.
Well, that surely that could be done if you got more than 51% of the vote, wouldn't it? I mean, do you think you will get that?
I don't think we're going to get 51% of the vote, and no party has since 1977.
And even if you did get 51% of the vote, what you're saying is that anybody who's got a family connection running to Fianna Fáil is ineligible for public office in any way.
I didn't say anything about family connections, but certainly anyone who's in Fianna Fáil, who's supplied them or done anything with them or been associated with them in any substantial way.
Well, listen, Fianna Fáil put an awful lot of your fellas on the state boards, give them judgeships, give them things and so on. Should they not have done that?
There were very few state boards. There might have been a few judgeships. But the reality is what we need in this country is regime change. And it's not going to be good enough just to have a change of government. The new government, when it comes in, is going to have to be large enough.
It sounds like you want stable majority to last 2 years.
You see a situation whereby Nick Leeson, who brought down Barings Bank, was put in prison. You see Bernie Madoff
in Galway now, and he's advising the local football team.
And you see Bernie Madoff in the US has been put in prison. You know, as far as I'm concerned,
I
would like to see Fianna Fáil ministers go on trial after the next general election.
In what way do you see Nick Leeson or Bernie Madoff being connected with Fianna Fáil?
They brought down the institutions which they are responsible for. What Fianna Fáil has done now is essentially brought down the state. They have brought a country which had huge potential and huge success, and they brought the country to its knees. And
it's not why we have elections, though. To change that, but I'm not sure about the root and branch getting
the election can't just be about a change of government. It has to be about a change of direction, about a new stable government lasting at least two terms that's going to rebuild our economy and build
a new
society.
Every one of them out of state boards, anybody with a Fianna Fáil connection off state boards out of any position in public life. That's what you seem to be saying to me now.
That's right. We need to have the entire system purged and cleansed.
Alex, do you go along with that?
Well, I think if you were going to do it at that level, this new government position that's going to open up now, Eamon O'Keefe's department is going to be abolished, would probably have to be dedicated to that role for a period of 3 or 4 years. So entrenched and so ingrained are the kind of things that Leah was talking about. But can I just say this?
Would you have to have, for instance, interviews with people for any job and ask them?
I think there's just an element of fantasy there. I mean, that's just, you know, that's simply, you know, I mean, I don't think that government is about change of government is about replacing one form of patronage with another form of patronage, frankly. I think that we need much more fundamental reform than that. But can I just say this? You know, that there's an element of presumptuousness here in terms of what the Labour Party will do after the general election, which I don't agree with, particularly from Leo. I mean, whatever about what's in this report in terms of it being setting an agenda for debate and so on, and we can talk about that, there's nothing in the report that points the way as to what's going to happen after the next general election. That'll happen after the next general election, and we'll see what happens, and we'll see who the people vote for, and including whether they vote for Fine Gael or Labour or Fianna Fáil, and let's see what happens then in terms of how a new government will be formed. I don't know who, you know, whether there'll be a new government. I very much hope there will be, by the way. I very much hope there'll be a new government. And I do agree with what Leo says, that Fianna Fáil should be in opposition for a very long time. But there should be no presumptions at all that that simply means that there will be a coalition government between Fine Gael and Labour. Certainly not along the terms or the basis.
Why do you think that you might do business with Fianna Fáil?
I don't know what's going to happen after the
But are you so open to doing business with Fianna Fáil as you are with Fine Gael?
You will appreciate, Sam, I don't set the coalition strategy for the party. And Eamon has spoken about this on a number of occasions. But, you know, Leo points to the issue in relation to job loss.
He did say, though, we will not go and do business with Fianna Fáil after the next election. I think he did say that very clearly, didn't he?
Well, he certainly did comment before the election, before the local elections and European elections, in terms of the collapse that the Fianna Fáil party was suffering and then went on to sustain in the local elections. And I think there's a widespread belief that what Leo says is right, that they have brought the country to its knees. I mean, lifelong supporters of Fianna Fáil were saying to me during the by-election, lifelong supporters, and not just one or two isolated, that they would never vote for them again. I mean, one man, one man said to me that if he thought a member of his family would go out and vote for them, as they had been doing for generations, that he would,
something. 3 weeks before the last general election, I, among others, went on the Late Late Show, have confidently predicted that Fianna Fáil were going to be beaten, so that's the way the thing goes.
I would make no assumptions about what, you know, Labour's independent party, and I fully respect that, and I make no assumptions about what they should or shouldn't do or might do.
Listen, we have to
but I hope Alex isn't saying that the Fianna Fáil Labour coalition is still
listen,
on the
cards. Text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
With VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health. The Sunday Supplement, 100-102 Today FM.
Welcome back, I'm Sam Smith. This is the Sunday Supplement. On our panel today, we have the Fianna Fáil TD for Carlo Kilkenny, John McGuinness, the Labour Senator Alex White, and Fine Gael spokesman on Enterprise, Trade and Employment, that's Leo Varadkar. We'll be talking to our US correspondent Ed Hayes live from New York in about a half an hour. And don't forget, you can text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. Anyway, the Greens had a meeting yesterday, and was it 214 for, 107 against, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's 321 voted. But anyway, they're going to support the Lisbon Treaty. They got the 66 2/3% they needed to get it through exactly. Uncanny as that may seem, but they did. But the other things apparently they're going to look for in their programme for government, John McGuinness, is they're going to cut down the number of TDs from 106 to as few as 150. Now, you might get 16 volunteers through, you know, natural wasting, retirement and things like that. I don't know how you would do that. But how seriously do you take the Greens?
I think in relation to that piece of legislation or that proposal, they are interested in reform of local government, which would have a spin-off in terms of the number of TDs and senators and so on. And I think that a case can be made for the reform of the Senate and indeed the reform of county councils. We are going through better local government at the moment, which is probably the worst form of local government because it is so bureaucratic and takes up so much time and energy and so on. So from the point of view of that sense of debate, there is a debate necessary and there is new changes needed in terms of how we run our affairs at local level, because it too takes up a huge amount of money.
Mm. But as regards to the Greens in government, do you think they've been a trustworthy partner? For instance, last week they took the safest option off the lot by abstaining on the crime bill when it was going through, when it was never going to be defeated. Is that gesture politics?
Yeah, you see, I see nothing wrong with that. I mean, in terms of to go back to local government for a minute, in terms of the ending of the dual mandate, I was hoping that they might have a free vote in the Dáil back then, and we decided really through Labour, Fine Gael and the other members just exactly what we wanted to do there. But the Greens, I liked Eamon Ryan, like in terms of his ministry, in terms of what he's doing. Likewise with John Donnelly.
And lots of people do.
Yeah, they have an agenda. They have a set agenda, and a narrow agenda, and they follow that clearly in their departments. And they're intent on change. And I like the idea of that, to take on what is the status quo and to try and change it, which is a little bit what Leo was saying. But I got to say it to you, Leo, in defence of Fianna Fáil, and rooting out all of those or any association with Fianna Fáil, it is that type of rhetoric and position that will actually frighten Labour from ever doing business with you. And I think that the electorate in terms of your leader and how they really see you as being a possible government are not quite sure about your position either. And may I say this to you, that you know, as we discuss politics and the changes in the board snip and indeed the reform of the local government system and so on that John Gormley is proposing, there is a need for Labour, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and I'd put us in there as well, to have real policies, not to be relying on the stuff that you're coming out with, not to be saying stuff that is just so negative against the other parties and has no real political content.
And
I've listened to you. Well, it's better that you would explain that to the electorate than you would take the position that everyone that has any association with Fianna Fáil should be rubbish, because some people that have been within Fianna Fáil and have got positions by virtue of being appointed to boards and so on have made a huge contribution right across the board. And in fact, I have appointed people to boards, two or three of them, who I didn't even meet them. I was just impressed by their CV and impressed by what they stood for. And I think that we have to see more.
Actually, John, if I can come in there, Liam, there was one thing, Charlie McCreevy, I remember once speaking to him, and he said that his, as regarding to Fianna Fáil, he says that, you know, if you want to see what Fianna Fáil is about, he says that, for instance, St. Patrick's was a member of Fianna Fáil, and that every great Irishman who had ever lived was a member of Fianna Fáil, and so on.
Well, look, there's one thing I'm pretty sure of, and it's that, you know, the public do want responsibility for this crisis, and they do hold Fianna Fáil responsible, and they want to see them pay. And one thing the Fine Gael guarantees, apart from all the policies, and we've policies in so many areas now, whether it's health, whether it's jobs, whether it's the semi-states, whether it's post-sector reform, you name it, a detailed fiscal strategy, beyond that, what we offer is a guarantee of change, and that it won't just be a change of coalition partner or a change of government, but it will be a total change of direction.
But you're frightened, Alex, this morning. He won't even say you're going to government with you.
Don't worry, I'm not frightened now. I don't do frightened.
Are you saying they're incompetent rather than corrupt then, Fianna Fáil? Mm-hmm.
I think incompetence is more common than corruption. In Ireland, people...
Yes, I think people, so, because there's a lot more stupid people than there are in jail, yeah, I suppose. And,
but there has to be. We can't just, you know, turn around and say that, everyone should get together and we should all be nice to each other, and there should be, you know, a politics of unity and a government of national unity. You know, we are in this mess because of Fianna Fáil and because of the irresponsibility of Fianna Fáil, because of the cronyism of Fianna Fáil. And
yes, but
of
you seem to say excluding anybody from Fianna Fáil, Leo, even if they might be the best person for the job. And that is where you could go wrong, because presumably if they, 40% or something of the people voted, 42% in the last election, surely then there must be a sizable percentage of their supporters who are competent, decent people. How on earth could you exclude them from, participating in Irish public life?
Well, we didn't say they couldn't. I didn't say they couldn't participate.
In they could go to school and go to work.
They could continue to be a member of the Dáil and the Senate. But the regime change.
But I disagree. The problem is not about just simply replacing one group of people who are doling out patronage with another group of people
that's not
patronage. I accept that that's not what you mean, and you do say other things and you do talk about policy. But the problem is that, I mean, I saw Richard Bruton say this about 3 or 4 months ago in an article in the paper, and I agreed with him. He said, you know, because a lot of people are talking about national government and politics should bury their differences and everybody get together. In fact, a big element of the importance of the political system is to present options to people, different ways of approaching the same problem. That's what politics is about. There's no point in having 166 people or 150 or any number of people in there if they're all saying the same thing.
Like a big dinner party in there.
What are the differences? What are the real differences between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, for example, on policy issues that people should pick from? Does the Labour Party have, I think, obviously, and I would say, have a different view, which in many ways is actually different from both Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. A lot of policy choices, a lot of policy issues. That's the kind of politics that we need to have in this country that we haven't had for a long, long time, if we've ever had it. And frankly, you know, we have historical differences that have led to the emergence of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael in previous generations that an awful lot of people are scratching their heads and wondering, what is the difference? Or why do we have Fianna Fáil and these two big catch-all parties?
I can see that, but for instance, Fianna Fáil people probably would say, well, for instance, Fianna Fáil get an awful lot more people whom you would consider the working class, would be Labour Party voting for them.
No, I accept that. I'm not stupid. I accept that there's a challenge for the Labour Party very often in terms of a lot of the vote that goes to Fianna Fáil. For example, in Kilkenny, I suspect that a lot of the vote that would have been a Labour vote, John gets it. For being a very good TD and a very good operator in his constituency.
Alex, a good point,
but
just
we
to go
need to
John
move politics on from that.
Yeah, John, in June the 5th local elections, people who support you down there did much better than traditional Fianna Fáil supporters. You seem, and the same happened, for instance, in Dublin Central, where people who were seen as not part of the Ahern influence, Mary Fitzpatrick topped the poll there, Bertie Ahern's brother didn't even get elected to the council. Your councillors did very well. Does it not seem strange to you that that Fianna Fáilers will vote with people who are arguing with head office before they vote for, you know, orthodox Fianna Fáil?
I don't think it was about voting for people who were against head office or who seemed to be on the edges or the margins of Fianna Fáil. It was a question of voting for people who, over years, had presented themselves really as community candidates, as people who were really and truly representing the people, who were not prepared to work hand in glove with, for example, a bureaucracy, because you want to make the best argument for the people that you're representing. And I think that that's what they want to see. They want to see that dynamic restored between politics and the system. And that's not there at present. And if you look at the debate that we're having now, it's about the McCarthy report. He is the man that has put before us the choice in terms of policies. And he's forcing the political system into a response, which in turn has been forced by the IMF. So it is that what is needed out there in the general public. And may I say this to you about the banks and so on and the boards, which is the same argument. Yes, we want to clean up the banks. Yes, we want to see people there that are competent and the boards of the banks representing the taxpayers. Do we not want to see the same on the public boards such as FOSS? Should they not be gone? Should there not be a slimmer board?
Of course you do. And that's the point that I'm making. It's not
anyone that did not show competence in terms of their management and their board membership, example for us, should be gone.
Absolutely.
There should be no room
for the type of
activity that went on there, and the board members are responsible. And that's what it's about, appointing people to boards. It's about, are you competent for the job? As a politician, are you competent?
John, just hold on a second. We've got a message from Cove of support for Leo, arriving like the US cavalry. Tom and Cove says, I've always voted Fianna Fáil, but Leo was right. FF have destroyed the country. They bought the last two elections. Now we have Bertie's legacy. We are bankrupt. So there you go. Support from Cove, Tom.
Well, we bought social partnership over the last 12 years when there was no war. We bought peace. So there's a whole load of issues in relation to how we govern the country. You go back.
That's a very illuminating thing, what you just said. Now, you clearly think time to say bye-bye to social partnership.
Well, that's been my position. A social partnership has gone past its sell-by date.
Yeah.
And I believe we have to recognise that.
It's also, I think, the Minister for Finance's position at the moment.
I would actually have a different position, and you might be surprised to hear that. As far as I see it, there were two phases of social partnership. There was the phase of social partnership in the late 80s, whereby the different groups put aside their sectional interests and came together and agreed a common good that they would all benefit from.
Yep.
What you had in the last 10 years was brown envelope social partnership. You had.
Do you mean from benchmarking on?
I don't know when you want to start, but it started at a certain point where essentially all it was about was taking the cake of national wealth and dividing it up among the vested interests. What we now need is a third phase of social partnership, which is a totally new social partnership, whereby we're saying to everyone, to employers, to unions, to government, that very tough decisions have to be made. but the pain won't be just for the sake of pain. That if the pain is taken now, that there will be a return for it, that there will be a social dividend, that there will be universal health insurance system.
Well, I'll just go to Alex on that, because Alex...
That's something that people can buy into, but it also needs to be bigger. We need to bring in other people as well. We need to bring in independent small business. We need to bring in the self-employed. We need to bring in the professions as well, because they also have to make a contribution to this.
They must also be included too.
And you can't tell what's happening now where the social partners are negotiating on their behalf.
But I want to say something to Alex now, just very quickly. Alex, we ended up with a Taoiseach who's paid higher than the President of America, the Prime Minister of Britain, or
one of those media things. But anyway,
in his wages he does. Certainly our judges are higher paid. Our senior civil servants are certainly better paid. Now, this purely happened because somebody formed a committee who got the result that they wanted in the first place, i.e. people in the public sector.
But even during the height of
themselves.
Social partnership, even at the height of social partnership, the second phase that Leo has characterised, governments made the decisions.
Absolutely, they made the decisions
to put up pay on the basis of it having been debated and so on in social partnership. My problem, can I just add another issue to the question of social partnership? If you look back over the last 15 years, that this contest of ideas about what needs to happen, like this difference and controversy about whether you cut social welfare or whether you, whatever it is people seem to want to advocate in the course of the aftermath of the McCarthy report, that contest must happen where it should happen, which is in the Parliament. And the dynamic of political discussion and economic debate has been removed from the Parliament. And that's one of the problems that I've had with social partnership, is that you find, not a problem with the individuals concerned, that unions have to fight their corner, employers as well, but you should not move the dynamic of public debate and discussion about the use of public resources and what priorities you have about public resources out of the Dáil and Senate and into another
place. Can we come back and talk?
Another
that
place.
We really have to go now, Alex. Text us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100 to 102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
Welcome back on our panel today. John McGuinness, Alex White, Leo Varadkar will be talking to US correspondent Led Hayes live in New York soon. And you can still phone us 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. John in Cork has called to say the ideal scenario is like Sweden with high tax but great public service, healthcare and education. We'll be left with high tax, children being taught in porta cabins and patients lying on trolleys in hospital corridors. At what point do we beg our cultural motherland to allow our failed state back into the union? There's somebody being provocative this morning. Another caller from Cork. God, everybody in Cork must be tuned in to Today FM this morning. Lisa says, it's so frustrating listening to politicians talking about cleansing and trials. Please let's hear about solutions. Show your focus on the future of Ireland, not on the blame game and not on the next election. It's too short-sighted. That's Lisa of Cork, who is a visionary, no less. Another caller, this is John in Limerick, says, what about a once-off wealth tax of all 200,000 and all 33,000 millionaires? It won't put anyone in the dole, and it amounts to about 66 billion. There's John. John's applying for your job, I think, Leo. I'm not sure it would work out like that.
That doesn't add up.
He says he wants it amounts. A wealth tax of 200,000 euros on all 33,000 millionaires, which would bring in 66 billion. John has been doing a bit of back of envelope.
We still have millionaires.
No, not 33,000.
No, I don't think
probably
so.
Still about 20,000.
If you read the papers this morning, there's nothing less.
Listen, Leo, you scrubbed up. You're in your green outfit this morning. Tell me, swine flu. There's a story in the front of the Tribune today that suggests mass deaths of young people. Now, I heard somebody facetiously saying earlier that this, of course, could help the national crisis because students are expensive people and student loans and so on. But one wouldn't like to be now to be too flippant about it, because clearly a lot of people are going to get swine flu. Paradoxically, any older people are much safer because they would have built up immune to being, you know, subjected to flu viruses through the year. How serious is this? It has got serious now, hasn't it, in the UK?
It is
and
serious.
And around the world.
I was at a briefing with the chief medical officer there last week, and it is a flu virus. It's certainly the moderate virus is more severe than your usual seasonal flu, and it does appear that some groups are more susceptible to developing a severe illness than others. Now, the vast majority of people who will get it will only have a mild illness, and some may even know they don't have it at all, may not even know they have it at all. But there does appear to be some groups, pregnant women in late stages of pregnancy, some younger people as well, and people with chronic diseases who are more at risk of complications than the rest of the population. But some of these figures that I've seen in terms of the number of deaths, I understand they're based on, you know, planning for worst case scenarios. It's not that anyone thinks it's likely that there will be.
Evan, just to ask you something from this, in view of what you said earlier. Are there more Fine Gael senior doctors than Fianna Fáil senior doctors?
Well, I'm not a senior doctor. I'm a GP trainee.
You're just in your last year.
I'm a trainee specialist, technically. But I don't know. We've three in Fine Gael: Liam Toomey, James Riley, and myself. And on Fianna Fáil, there's Jim McDade and
Rory O'Hanlon.
So I think that's everyone.
And Sligo, Jimmy.
Oh, yeah, Jimmy Devins, of course. Three.
But I mean, Fine Gael always fancied itself in the professions. Like, there's always no shortage of Fine Gael fellows in the law library. Alex, wouldn't that be correct?
There's a few of them around still, apparently.
Are there more Fine Gaelers in the professions? Just anecdotally.
All the major parts will be well represented.
Alex.
Well, certainly I think the Fine Gael hegemony or whatever in the law library is a thing of the past. That's just from my observation.
That's a great word, hegemony.
I think
China, I remember, the other, was mentioned in association with
the other big party, I think, has won through there in terms of numbers and in terms of.
Are you suggesting that lawyers would simply join a political party to better their own?
No, but traditionally it's been seen as a sort of a Fine Gael stronghold or whatever. I don't think it is anymore. I think it's much more diverse politically, to be honest, with quite a lot of, I mean, we have a Labour lawyers group in the legal profession. I think people, a lot of lawyers and barristers aren't that political.
But the Labour lawyers go drinking together, that sort of thing, lunch and
occasionally have a drink after we have an important seminar.
Yeah. And I know some of them, and a good fun lot they are too. Would you say they're the best fun of the people in the law library?
Look, I wouldn't say that. No, they're fun people. Right,
and modest too, is that what you're saying?
There's very little modesty now.
I was thinking, you know, most of the Fáil guys are probably appointed to the judiciary.
The judges already.
Committees and all sorts of quangos.
There certainly are a lot of them. There have been cross party appointments as well.
Fianna Fáil lawyers have always said to me the only way to get a judgeship now is to join Fine Gael. That's what they were saying for a long time, because I think in recent years there have been a lot of Fine Gael supporters who've been elevated to the bench. But I never heard anybody say they weren't excellent appointments.
As Alex was rightly saying, that isn't the way we should do appointments at all in future. We need to have a proper system of scrutinising how people are appointed to all state boards and all state positions, including proper active scrutiny of these appointments. It's what I want to see in terms of the cleansing process is not a replacement of one form of cronyism with another, but an end to cronyism and a replacement with a whole new system.
Way to do that is to put Fianna Fáil people out of all positions.
That's the first step, certainly. That's the first step, and the second step is reappointment. Using a new open transparent.
Well, that sounds like lawyer jokes from him. The one, you know, what he's saying, you know, what's, you know, the death of 50 lawyers, you know, a good start and things like that. But it is fairly rough. Anyway, Alex, back to the swine flu thing. Have you given it any thought?
I'm just concerned, as anyone else would be, just reading newspaper reports. But I think what Leo says is right. I think the universities are simply just putting in place a plan for students coming back from, a lot of them would have been abroad and so on during the summer, and to come back in the first week or sometime at the end of September, that they have to have a plan in place. They may even have to close, sections of the universities or the whole university if things get bad. I think that the headline of the Sunday Tribune is mass swine flu deaths. I'm not sure if the story really does justice to that headline, in the sense that I think there's a concern that there could be deaths, but the vast majority of people who contract this swine flu won't, in fact, thankfully, die.
I suspect
from it.
A lot of them didn't even know they had it.
Yeah,
would that be the case, Leo?
That would be the case. Is that, you know, a lot of people won't know they have it. Some will have a very mild illness, some will have a flu-like illness, which would be a bit more severe than your usual seasonal flu.
But is it worse? Because the normal flu, like anybody, a lot of people who get
you know, come back and say, I had the flu. They've actually had a bad cold. Like, the flu flattens you. You just have to go to bed.
No, it depends. Different people will have different degrees of symptoms. But, yeah, people do talk about the flu in Ireland as if, you know, as if every common cold is the flu. And, of course, that isn't the case. I think I had it once. Like, to the extent that there are differences, and there's no, you know, I asked this question of the HSE when they came into us, is that when, if I see a patient on Monday morning in Inchicore, how will I know, you know, that they have a flu or they don't have a common cold? And, yeah, of course, there's no straight answer to that because symptoms do vary from person to person.
And but, do you have to send off a sample then?
No, there's certain particular cohorts where you would, and others where you wouldn't. But that's what they're saying now is that, you know, doing to that level isn't going to be practical. But the kind of things that would make you more suspicious of a flu would be somebody with a very high temperature, and then somebody who particularly has, you know, joint and muscle symptoms. You know, this very bad cold that you may have had in the past, where your joints were sore, your knuckles were sore, and your actual muscles were sore as well. And it's those kind of symptoms that are a little bit different to your usual, you know, head cold.
But most people, the news reporting though, and the coverage in the papers, I think, is causing a lot of alarm for people. Being told, I think, by the bishops today, not to give the sign of peace at mass.
Well, apparently that's what Chancellor Van
Der Bellen says. The HSE says that's not necessary.
Well, I don't know where that came from.
What's that? The sign of peace?
No.
Do you approve of the sign of peace at mass?
I have no objection to the sign of peace. That's sincere.
I know lots of people.
That's actually in the Bible, though, as you were quoting earlier. I don't think.
No, that's not.
What is in the Bible?
I don't think it was in the Bible.
No, sign of peace. I know lots of people who really don't like it. You know, who think it's
awkward.
You know, would be better off without doing it.
But I wonder where that came from, because, you know, as far as I'm aware, there hasn't been an advisory from the HSE not to shake hands, so I kind of wonder where. I think it's something we need to be careful about. You know, a flu pandemic is very serious, and there will certainly be deaths from it.
And there will be one at some stage. Like, when you look at 1919, Spanish flu was killed more than the First World War.
1919, that's right. But I think, and there was one in the 60s as well, but you know, I don't think that there's anything to be served from
60s. I didn't know that. Was that the Woodstock flu or something? Was it?
I wouldn't remember the '60s as well as you, Sam. But there was it was fifties or sixties. There was another flu pandemic as well. But I don't think the hysteria being generated in the media is necessarily helpful either.
Oh, but listen, a message for John. John, if you're going to be in town this week on Wednesday night at the Button Factory in Temple Bar, there's going to be and board Schnip, Gallows Humour and all the rest at the Summer Satire Special, and it's musical comedy and satire from Paddy Cullivan, News Talk 106, The Emergency Live, the best comedy films of 2008 and 2009, and it's going to be there all night. So listen, head down there this week on Wednesday night. Are you going to be in town for it, John?
That's the place to be, Sam.
Yeah.
Wednesday night,
yeah. Yeah, I don't know now. I have to work out a costume to wear to it. Oh no, Wednesday night, you know what I'm doing? I'm going to Leonard Cohen on Wednesday night.
That's indeed a nice thing.
Are you? Yeah, I think there's a special place for fellas like this. It's going to be St. John's Ambulance Brigade. Many more than at the normal concert, I think. And we will talk about that later. But I think we're going to go early to a break now, because somewhere in America, Ed Hayes is putting on his pyjamas to answer the phone. So don't you forget that you can call us. Where are we? 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100 to 102 Today FM. The Sunday Supplement with VHI Healthcare. Dedicated to one thing and one thing only. Your health.
There we are. We're back anyway. Listen, we just got an email in saying the reason why there are so many Cork people listening today is because Dublin are still in the hurling championship and they are not. That's from D in Tipperary. Anyway, he's out there. Ed Hayes, how are you today?
Doing good. It's a beautiful where I am today.
Hello, Ed.
Beautiful, beautiful day.
Nope, I'm not getting you, Ed. Hello.
Yes, am I here? Gary?
No, I'm not hearing Ed Hayes, if he's hearing
Hello?
Me.
Can you hear me?
Ah, well, Ed, I think what you may have to do is to talk to the nation or something, because... Hello, Edward Hayes?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. So, anyway, the country was at a standstill there, I think. Tell me, what's happening at your end now?
Well, when they heard the ad about French kissing and Maxwell Coffee, I think they all went out to this local Starbucks.
So, listen, you're down on Long Island today, are you?
I am. It's beautiful.
In your country seat, so to speak?
In my country seat. I have been working on my garden. It looks very pretty, so I'm very happy.
Yeah, and is your wife with you?
My wife is asleep, Sam. It's 7:30 in the morning over here, all right?
I do.
Sensitivity to international relations, you know what I mean? If I get her up to listen to me talk, I'm going to have to go on the run. You'll have to hide me.
Yeah, well, tell me, how about your teenage kids? Are they with you?
My teenage son is with me. He's doing very well. He works in a flower market from 2:30 in the morning till noon.
And does he actually like you, Ed?
He likes the money, and I think he does like it. To tell you the truth, the flower market, it's working, guys, obviously, and it pays very well because you can't get people to work from 2:30 in the morning until noon, especially when you have to go at a dead run. So a lot of people are kind of fun. Also, it's very heavily illegal immigrants, and a lot of them are a lot of fun.
Anyway, apparently you're mad as hell and you're not taking any more at the minute. Goldman Sachs?
Well, this is what's happened with Goldman Sachs. Turns out that Goldman Sachs announced its biggest profits ever. $770,000 profit per individual, including the people that cleans the rooms, the secretaries, the assistants, the clerks. So the guys at the top will be getting many, many millions. Now, there are two things that raise issues with them. One is that they borrowed a lot of money from the government.
Yeah.
And at a time when it was very hard to borrow money, the government said, well, listen, if you borrow money from us, you've got to control what you pay your staff. So they then immediately paid the money back. But what happened is that they got essentially a great deal on a short-term loan, which was very helpful to them. Second, they had a lot of money invested with and a lot of back-and-forth financial obligations with a giant insurance company called AIG. So what happens is that they stood to lose a lot of money, an enormous amount of money, if AIG went under. So what happens is the government gives AIG tens and tens of billions of dollars to bail them out. AIG then turns around and gives that money to Goldman Sachs so that Goldman Sachs doesn't lose the money. Now, the man in charge of this program for the United States government is a alumnus of Goldman Sachs, a former head of Goldman Sachs, Henry Paulson. So under the circumstances, I think it's natural to look twice at these kinds of transactions. Plus, the other thing is that because of what has happened to all the large banks, they did an analysis of how Goldman Sachs makes its money. And what Goldman Sachs essentially did was take all these, which have now proven to be total failures, financial products, and they didn't invest in them themselves, but they sold them. So all of these subprime mortgages, instruments, all of these things that subsequently failed, they sold on to other financial institutions or to the consumers. And what happens then is that even though the investment turns out to be garbage, you generate a short-term profit, and as a result, you get a very large bonus. So am I suspicious of Goldman Sachs? I'm extremely suspicious of Goldman Sachs, and I think that its ambiguous relationship with the government and private industry is very unpleasant. I'll go that far. And at a time really when our stimulus program does not look like it's working, our unemployment is going up very dramatically. There's no particular indication that anything is turning around. Now it's too early to know, but it's not too early for Goldman Sachs to go out there and grab more dollars than they ever had before.
Yeah, but tell me, Ed, they borrowed money from the government, they paid it back, they did their banking better than anybody else did it, they made a profit, they give a bonus to their staff. Is this not the way America works?
It's supposed to be the way, but there's two things about it that I think, I'm not saying that they're extremely good at what they do, okay? But I have stick-up guys that are really good at what they do, all right? In fact, one of my favorite people in the world is a stick-up guy, and he's a great stick-up guy.
What's his name, Ed?
Has he even got a nickname, has he?
What?
Has he got a nickname at least?
Yeah, he's got a nickname, but I can't give you that either. I got a great story about him. He goes out one night with, let's say his nickname is Frankie, which is not. He goes out on a date one night with a girl, and she says to him, hey, you know, his real name is, say, John. John, nice to meet you. How you doing? Where you from? Stat. He has an unusual nickname. Let's say it's Frankie Blue Eyes. She says, oh, that's it. Then somebody says, hey, Frankie Blue Eyes, how you doing? And a girl turns and says, your name is Frankie Blue Eyes? He says, yeah. She says, no, I think you killed my uncle.
And do you think he did it?
You know what? He stayed on the date. That's how good-looking the guy is. the fact of the matter is that there's two things about this relationship. One is that a lot of these power relationships between the people that are in the government and the Goldman Sachs are not disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So no, the very few people knew about the AIG relationship between AIG and Sachs until Goldman Sachs until the Times disclosed it. First problem. Second problem is it's not whether or not you pay the loan back. At a time when you can't borrow money and you need to borrow money, the granting of the loan is the benefit. So I just think that...
Well, they got the loan to stop them going under, Ed, I think. It's not why they got the loan, the same as the rest of the banks. They just seem to have managed their business better. Would that be correct?
I would say that Goldman Sachs said they needed a loan and that there was never a real risk that Goldman Sachs was going under. They got the loan. But that I think that the question... It's very hard for me because I really am not an expert in this field and therefore I should exercise some restraint how critical I am, although I will say that I am an expert in the field of after-hours clubs, strip joints, and genuine low-life sexual activity, and none of those women like these guys. In fact, I will absolutely promise you that not one of them showed any interest in any of these bankers 10 seconds after they lost their money. So, but what I think is that you do need more transparency. If you have an interaction between the private sector and banking, and the government, you need some idea who's on each side. And when you have a Goldman Sachs people on both sides of the transaction and their decisions make a big difference to the financial standing of Goldman Sachs and the people involved and perhaps to themselves indirectly, you need to know that. Listen, let's say that Sam and I are on the on opposite sides of the transaction. Sam may not look to profit from it, from that transaction, but he knows if he wins my heart and mind, that down the road I'm going to do something for him to pay him back for the help he gives me. So you need to know something about the relationships, and we don't now. The government, our government owns the big banks, the big insurance companies, the big automakers, and so therefore there's an enormous possibility for, first, and with the stimulus package, it's going to own every individual because all your jobs are going to depend on. So you need to have a lot more transparency, if that's making sense.
Yeah, I was just looking at something from Time magazine that says that Goldman Sachs has set aside $11.4 billion to compensate its worker, or 386,489 per employee. That sounds like a good place to work.
Yeah, well, I read it was 770. They're probably not counting some of them. That's the whole thing about numbers. I think the point of it is not whether they make money. I don't care if they make a lot of money. The question is, to what extent they make money based on relationships that I don't know about. If you have a government that's now basically owning or controlling very large parts of the economy, it'd be nice if we knew if there was more disclosure about the possible benefits and the relationships between the people that control the government decisions and the people that benefit from it.
Ed, you seem to be saying though that you think Bernanke has done a favor for his old buddies in Fianna Fáil?
Well, I don't know, but I'd like to know more. In other words, the AIG thing, I think, really smelled. And that was not disclosed. And the decisions that were involved in making the AIG decisions were quick. They were somewhat secretive, and they may have been legitimate, but you don't want to have a situation where the population walks around and says, what's going on here? So you're going to have a different standard of disclosure.
Well, Leo, or Liam Collin, I did say Fianna Fáil there regarding Bernanke. Of course, what I meant was that Bernanke was doing...
In your heart, you still like Bernanke and Fianna Fáil. That must not be your team here, I guess.
No, actually, it's before, because Leo Varadkar here is very suspicious of guys who are in the government party, Fianna Fáil. And what you seem to be suggesting there is that Bernanke was helping his mates, and he's in the central bank,
but,
so
you know,
to speak.
The thing is, I don't know. I mean, he's a lot of people think he's a brilliant guy,
yeah.
And so I don't know. But I'd
yeah,
like
but
to know.
He's not a crookhead, I don't think, is he?
No, but I think there was more criticism of this guy. I tell you what, I think the changes are just a second. They've been endless numbers of congressional hearings now attacking all of these bankers and the guys that left banking and making these decisions for the government, then they go back to banking. And the thing about it that's hysterically funny is that, to my mind, is a lot of the congressmen that are leading the charge here would take the pennies off their mother's eyes, you know what I mean, if that's what they needed to get money.
Oh, then, well, listen, Ed, we have to go to an ad break. So listen, thanks a million, and we shall talk again next week. And you out there, if you want to text us, it's 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile.
100 to 102 Today FM, the Sunday supplement with VHI Healthcare, dedicated to one thing and one thing only, your health.
Welcome back. We're in the last lap now. And, of course, I'm in the studio with John McGuinness, with Alex White, Leo Varadkar. We've already heard from Ed Hayes. But you can still call us, or text us, rather, 083-4100-102. That's thanks to 3 Mobile. Or, if you want to, through the week, if you missed any of it today, you can download our podcast through iTunes, or just go straight through to our website on todayfm.com. Anyway, something happened. I got an email which I thought was really astonishing today, and that was the protest at Leonard Cohen's concert. The Ireland Palestine Solidarity Campaign will be protesting outside his concert and distributing leaflets outlining the reason why. Now, these people seem to think, he is Jewish, of course, which would not do him any good there. This, I think it's because he played in Tel Aviv. Now, I think the Bruno film was partly filmed in Tel Aviv, and he is Jewish too, so I'm surprised they're not. Of course, they will say they're not boycotting him because he's Jewish, but because he's done something that they didn't like. But, Alex, do you know this Irish or Ireland-Palestine
Yes,
solidarity?
I do know them. Support their aims, actually, myself.
Yeah, are you going to the concert?
I am going to the concert. First of all, I don't think it's fair to say that it's because he's Jewish. Nowhere in the press release is there any mention of
No, I did say it's because he...
It's because he is intending to play in Tel Aviv, by the way, not that he did.
Yeah, and the problem with Tel Aviv?
I think that he is perfectly entitled. The group is perfectly entitled to have a public demonstration of their views about
absolutely,
like this.
Yeah.
And it's not actually a picket in the sense that, I mean, I mentioned earlier when I'm going to the concert, I'm going to go to the concert.
It's attention-seeking behaviour, is that what
you're saying? Well, any organisation in a free country, in a free world, is entitled to draw attention to an issue they feel strongly about. You don't have to agree with them. Nobody has to agree with them.
No.
But the fact is, so long as it's a peaceful protest and it doesn't try to stop people doing what they're entitled to do, I see no problem with it.
It does have all the hallmarks, though, of a publicity stunt. You know,
it does. And
there are lots of
politicians would know all about that.
I know when I see one. And I'm sure there are lots of artists who have concerts in Tel Aviv and Haifa and Jerusalem. And they aren't picketed by the...
Bruno, the movie was filmed there. Do you think that should be picketed? Or would you defend anybody's right to do
that?
But
there is an anti-Semitic undertone there in the fact that they picked a Jewish artist.
That is nonsense. And grossly unfair. It's grossly...
I'm sure there are other artists who have performed in Tel Aviv
who aren't
facing a protest.
No, but I think that this is a classic, attempt to, it's grossly unfair to suggest that this organisation is having an anti-Semitic protest. Leonard Cohen is Jewish.
Well, Jews are Semitic, as are Arabs, that's not anti-Jewish.
But why don't they protest at other performers?
Because this is the one who's playing here this week. That's why they're protesting.
Why not next week?
No, I said to you earlier on.
Why not take that? They had a concert in Israel. Why didn't they protest there?
How do you know they didn't?
Concert? I don't know they didn't.
Well, there you go. Oh, no, okay, then the Bruno film was filmed partly in Tel Aviv.
Look, you're all getting very excited about a group of people.
They wanted
to cancel the event in Israel. They wanted to cancel the event in Israel. That's right. And they're entitled to have that view. They're entitled to have that view. What's the problem? Like, why do people get so excited about people having... All you have to do is disagree with them. And you're on a radio programme where people can listen to you. And I don't have a problem with it.
Do you know why? Because last night I actually watched something on television about Mendelssohn, the composer, and what the Nazis did there. And it really worries me. Jewish people have had a very difficult 1,000 or so years. And it just didn't start with the Second World War. And I think there were pogroms throughout Central Europe for a long, long time. And I do think to be Jewish can be more difficult than it is for other people.
This is about... I see it's 5-1, so it might take us a bit longer than 5 minutes. But the fact is that Israel has been guilty breaches of international...
American.
The question is, he's going to perform in a country that this organisation has problems with their human rights record. With their human rights record.
Do you not approve of Israel?
What is the unbelievable excitement that has been caused? This is a demonstration of I imagine, a relatively small number of people who are entitled in a free society to do it.
Well, I would have thought Leonard Cohen is one of the more gifted, talented, promoters of peace that I've seen in a long time.
We've had many, in the past, we've had rugby teams that we all admired and supported going to South Africa. We didn't want them to go to South Africa.
Oh, sorry. Israel and South Africa now you brought in.
People are entitled to make their view. You're very excitable about it, Sam.
Well, you brought up apartheid
as an example of how organisations are entitled in a free society to express their view.
And so they should be.
Exactly. That's all it is.
Except you do seem to think...
Some people are grasping onto apartheid. Some people want to grasp onto this to make a bigger point, to make a different point, which is to suggest that people who criticise Israel are anti-Semitic.
No,
and I think that's most unfair.
It's Leonard Cohen has been criticised there. Let's get that absolutely clear.
I think the group have made their point. That's a publicity.
Nobody's going to disagree with their right to protest, but I do disagree with the fact that they're targeting Leonard Cohen.
Among the many people who their political point of view and an attention-seeking exodus.
Or the trade with Israel, or the many people who visited Israel.
Anyway, listen, at the weekend, who's going to see you two? John, will you be there?
Well, my son was there. I might travel, yeah.
Yeah? Leo, are you going?
When's it on?
This weekend, for God's sake.
If you have a ticket, I'll go.
Yeah, I'd be just a few, two tickets. I might even go with Leo.
And no picketing.
Picketing is where you try to stop people going in.
Okay, well, are you going to see Ronaldo then tomorrow night?
No, but can I tell you about a fantastic piece? 30 seconds, 20 seconds. 20 Michael seconds. Collins, the guy who was left back in the mothership, who didn't get onto the moon, the other two guys did, got all the adulation. Brilliant piece about him, The Observer today. Very philosophical, but he describes himself today as moderately busy. He's 78. Quote, running, biking, swimming, fishing, painting, cooking, reading, worrying about the stock market and searching for a really good bottle of Cabernet for under $10.
My God.
So there's hope for you yet.
There is indeed, but listen, what else can I say? Except thank you, John McGuinness, thank you, Leo Varadkar, thank you, Alex White and Ed Hayes. Also, Mary Carroll, my producer, our engineer, Shane Dempsey, and Andrew Young, who's on the phones. And we're going to leave you with a message from... Leonard Cohen.